Welcome, everybody, to episode 248 of the Metabolis 2 podcast, which features myself, Ben.
And I am David, and yet another new Doctor Who episode.
What? We're being spoilt. Every week a new episode? What's going on?
I wonder if it can last.
I don't know how much longer this can last, but anyway.
Well, Russell T. Davis is back with yet another episode, and this week it is Dot and Bubble.
Dot and Bubble. Not Dot Cotton out of EastEnders, but a... First thing that springs to my mind when someone says dot, but a literal dot that floats in the air and a natural bubble of stuff. So what did we think? Well, let's let the listener out of his misery or her misery and tell them what we thought of the episode.
Well, I thought it was a vast improvement over the previous week, over 73 yards.
This Which story, is a low bar for you, I'll have
It was
to say.
A low bar, yes. But this one, I think, is perhaps one of the best of the series so far.
I'm going to say this is the best of the series so far. Hmm. I was very taken by this episode indeed, actually. I really, really liked it a lot.
So it's the best of the series so far?
I think so, yeah. Yep. I would go so far to say that.
It Dr. Light again, but not quite as light as last week. And there was a monster. So those are two improvements just in storytelling in itself.
Exactly. First monster, first real monster.
Yeah.
I think what we're getting now is that, you know, creatures that are people are not monsters. So monsters really have to be animals in our current incarnation of the show. And I think they're called man traps.
They are called man traps, yes.
Though I was very much reminded of the whatever it was in, I wrote it down but I've lost it. Whatever it was in the Iron Legion that the Doctor went up against in the space amphitheater. So, I mean, another callback to the Gibbons, Mills, Wagner era of Doctor Who. So that's what the man traps were reminding me of. But yeah, excellent monster. And I didn't feel the Doctor was light at all, even though, of course, he was, or they were, because Shooty wasn't in it that much. But the fact that he was on screen, and we had a kind of barnstorming little bit of performance in the last 5 minutes... really, that I didn't feel there was a lack of Shooty at all. The very strong doctoral presence throughout, I felt.
Yeah, but just touching on monsters, I think the real monster in the story was the main character, Linda Pepperbean.
Linda Pepperbean.
She was a monster.
Yeah, and we were sold. We were the cool thing is the lead up. We were sold that Linda Pepperbean would be some kind of heroine, but you know, and she even I think we can talk a little. We can talk. Best we'll start now with the cleverness of the whole thing, the relationship between Pepperbean and I'm going to call her Pepperbean because she's evil, rather than Lindy. The relationship between Ms. Pepperbean and Ricky September was a doctor companion relationship.
It was. I think at another time, Tom Rhys-Harries would have been cast as the Doctor.
He was excellent.
10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, you know, she's follows him. He's got good ideas. He's supportive.
He reads books. He turns off his social network.
Exactly. You know, he's full of vim and vigor. And she will take over doing the programming of the digits while he fights the creature. Very, very obviously a doctor, and he ends up being a completely perverted doctor-companion relationship when she, you know, betrays him utterly and gets him killed.
Yeah.
Yes, cause to save herself. I'll have to say, I mean, I think the whole alphabetical order thing was sort of setting that up more than anything. I'm not really sure why the dot is the dot is the, did the computer have any other name other than the dot, the network, whatever it was?
I think it was the dot.
Yeah,
live feed or whatever. I think live feed network.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe the dot was super procedural and had to do things in alphabetical order, like it's Y2K or something. But anyway, I mean, I did not see that coming. I was irritated by Ricky September. I thought, like, yeah, he's like another irritating. I didn't like any of the Pepperbean crew.
Not even Dr. P.
He's a meme creator as Dr. P. Dr. P was good. I've forgotten about Dr. P. But yeah, September irritated me. And then when he became a kind of a doctor, I was like, oh, okay, maybe he's not so irritating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought that was an excellent payoff at the end.
Yeah. Did you twig on that this is where the space racists were? This is the space racist colony.
Again, space racist. It's space racist. Space racism. Does it have a, can you contract it? Spaceism. No, I didn't until the final scene. Mm-hmm. Until it was like, oh shit, yes, that's what's been going on. And then, you know, I realized, and this is largely due to my engagement with social media, that, you know, not only was this planet of the space racists, it was also planet of the microaggressions. And that Lindy all the way through had really not been paying any attention and even being deliberately unattentive to anything that the doctor was saying because the doctor was black.
Mm-hmm. It was entirely Ruby Sunday who made the
running
contact for her. If it wasn't for Ruby, another white woman, a light white girl, she would have paid no attention to the doctor.
How about you? When did you peg this? Who this was about space racism?
I thought something was off because the entire cast just seemed like this is really white.
I guess. Unusually so. They were kind of
pale, Aryan looking, very Aryan looking,
very very pastel and Aryan. Mm-hmm. The whole thing was like a who's that movie director? I don't like that. I can't remember. It was like it was one of those films. Everything was just kind of very pale and washed out and kind of Club 1840 feeling. It felt very, like watching like The Only Way is Essex or something. Or Love Island. It was like space Love Island.
Mm-hmm. I twigged something was off with the people on there. So that when the doctor kept saying, what is it about you guys that you're not getting eaten? And so that kind of underscored.
Oh, interesting.
But they're all white. So did the people with different color skins get eaten first, or, you know? But it really wasn't until the end with the
right
with the you're not one of us. But it really didn't hit until the doctor's reaction again with the crying. It's sort of like, you guys are racist, and you're going to go die because you don't want to be with a black man.
Right. Right.
You know, if it's a Whitaker doctor and Ryan, would the dynamic have been different?
Interesting. Yeah.
Would they go with a woman, or did they have to have that guy at the end, Brewster Cavendish, be the leader?
I mean, I really liked that it was like a sort of traditional, almost kind of classic series group of survivors who were kind of setting off. You know, like David Campbell. In the end, you know, Dalek's Invasion, or I know the survivors on Skonos, or, you know, the kind of brightly colored costumed extras who have survived whatever horrors the Doctor have saved them from. And of course, you know, the Doctor never actually says, well, I can just stick you all in the TARDIS and we can go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. In this case, he actually did say that. And they said, I don't think so. We don't really travel with people like you. So we're just going to go off and probably get eaten by some
the
more
dinosaurs,
whatever dinosaurs are out there, or Daleks, or anything, or maybe they flourish in the jungle and become like space Hitlers or something, and we're gonna meet them again.
Well, we had that story with Rosa with the space racists, and I was going, well, what?
Right.
You know, most of the Doctor Who future societies are pretty integrated and have equality between ethnicities, but maybe this is where the space racist came from.
Yeah. One of the reasons I like this is because obviously at some point the writers of the show would have to have addressed the color of the Doctor's skin. And I was fully expecting a awkward but probably reasonably well-written historical episode that would work around that. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting a future because, you know, the future, as you said, the future in Doctor Who is generally pretty well integrated as for its time. And the idea that, you know, I think we can deal with racism in the past because, you know, obviously with a kind of Whiggish view of history, we all have, things get better, not worse. And the idea that the future has this level of disdain of people with a non-white, non-blonde hair, non-white skin, is so profoundly depressing.
Yeah.
That it actually makes the whole thing a real downer. It's like, oh my God, like these people are this advanced and they still have decided that there is some kind of weird racial purity that they want to subscribe to. So again, one of the reasons it worked for me, because I was not expecting this, and it was a real downer. I felt like, right, they are.
The rug was pulled successfully out from underneath the audience. Everyone watching, very, most very everyone successful. Watching it. Yeah,
yeah, very, now, very successfully.
Do you think the doctor picked up that Ricky September was dead? Because Pepper Bean just totally lied to him at the end.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously there's a few plot holes in this. I wasn't fully understanding why the dot just didn't kill everybody anyway, rather than getting in the man traps. Uh-huh. You know, maybe the dot was kind of sadistic and thought, well, these people are so shitty, I'm going to have them eaten by giant slugs from the beyond, rather than just kill them myself by flying at them. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think the doctor knew. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, Ricky September would have been a horrible racist as well. So, you know, I mean, our expectations are kind of completely flipped.
Do you think he would be, since he was reading books and he seemed to be an enlightened character? I don't think we have any indication that he would be.
Well, you know, the entire society is built on a massive construction of whiteness. So
right.
He probably was nice to black people that he happened to meet at any particular time, like, you know, slaves, servants, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he would have followed them into the future in any kind of way. No, I mean, I think when you're in that kind of society, especially a society like this, which seems to be very much built on conformity,
right.
You know, I was kind of reminded of the, you know, the society of the company, you know, on Pluto, you know, where everybody, you know, has to conform whether they like it or not, and they actually, in the end, they actually kind of sort of like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think when you have a society of that kind of conformity, it is very hard not to conform to that society.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So most likely, yeah. But just was, honestly, I kind of thought, who did Lindy Pepperbeam remind me of? In some ways, she reminded me of Donna.
Right.
And so at the end, when she kind of says, well, he's Coombs, not September. First off, I'm not sure why her dot would care, but I could kind of see Donna saying something like that, and I guess maybe that makes me
right
horrible of what I think of Donna. But
it was a typically kind of selfish, well, incredibly selfish, I mean literally selfish defense mechanisms, like, well, don't kill me, kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think again, in some ways, that puts us slap bang in the middle of thinking what we do in that situation. You know, would we accept death when we could get someone else to have to be killed instead, and we could escape? I mean, what would, you know, what would you and I do? David, it's a C. I'm an H. Let me go. You know, I mean, it really is, you know, I mean, we're never going to be in that situation. It's that kind of choice against, you know, a dot that was doing the Lord's work by exterminating racists in the most horrible way possible, getting them eaten in a kind of horrible, blood-curdling, dissolving your flesh kind of way by giant slugs.
So this is another AI that's gone wrong. We had Space Babies. It seemed like an AI that went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, AI that went wrong. And then Dot and Bubble. Every other story now is about AI going wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose, you know, it's like every other story with Moffat was about nanobots. You know, I mean, I guess it's whatever. It's what we're thinking about at the moment is artificial intelligence and how actually, well, I mean, you know, a lot of science fiction is about robots that turn on their masters. But, you know, currently right now, we're right in the middle of thinking how idiotic and horrible AI is. So, but again, I mean, I suppose, you know, you could say this is AI gone right. This is AI going like, hang on, the people who made me and whom I ostensibly serve are bad people. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to kill them all.
I suppose.
And then we applaud gently from the sidelines, because that kind of mass slaughter of people that we feel are wrong is something that we should be applauding.
I don't agree with that.
I'm not sure I fully agree with it either. I mean, you know, I mean, maybe the AI could have herded them into kind of, you know, Maoist-style re-education camps. and got them to like not be racist anymore. But you know, AIs are, as everyone knows, are not that intelligent.
Well, I don't think did the AI find them racist, or did they just? I think I thought the AI just found them incredibly annoying.
Yeah, I suppose I'm being generous about the AI. I'm saying like, okay, well, it decided to kill them because they were racist. But yes, no, I guess I'm reading too much into it. I think the explanation, you're right, that we were given is that it just found them annoying,
mm-hmm.
which they were. I found them annoying. One of the early emotions I had watching the episode is like, are these people supposed to be people that I'm rooting for? Because I'm kind of not rooting for them.
Right.
They're really, really annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, I mean, I think the part of the cleverness, you know, the kind of language and intonation, I mean, it was more enhanced, obviously. It was very similar to the way that our current Doctor, you know, speaks. You know, everyone's a honey and, you know, there's a lot of emoting, et cetera. You know, so I thought that was quite clever that culturally, you know, the way they interact with each other, they're actually quite similar to us, and they're quite similar to our hero as well, the person who's running the show.
Mm-hmm. It did really, I think, reflect pretty accurately about influencers and how hooked into the phones people are, especially perhaps in the teenage, young 20s set, a certain group.
I mean, you know, the hilariously obvious joke of Peppa being walking into a lamppost.
Right.
Well, they had lampposts, I'm not entirely sure. But maybe it was a data tower or something. You know, it was great. I mean, the only thing that you could have more is had her fall down a manhole, you know, cover her. Or step on a rake.
Right.
But yeah, the fact that she literally couldn't walk without being directed by the Dot, I thought that was great. That's a really nice piece of satire. You know, it's like all good satire, taking it to a ridiculous extreme so we see how ridiculous it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we walk along staring at these phones when actually we could be doing anything else.
Given it more time, I would have liked to seen, because they said Lindy said that they work 2 hours a day doing whatever, working on memes or whatever. Fine time was right. Then they party the rest of the time, but since they have no physical interaction, it must just be in their bubble.
Yeah,
is their parties.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe there is some, you know, there's some intoxicant or something that gets taken in your bubble, and you know, becomes a fun party time. Who knows what they get up to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some ways it was reminding me of. What's that story? I can't remember the author's story now. When the machine stops story, that famous story of when, you know, everyone is part of a giant machine and they all live in individual cubicles, and then one day the machine stops and they're kind of bereft and have no way to communicate with each other or even exist because everything was provided for them by a machine, or even like the Matrix, actually.
Like,
you know,
the E.M. Forrester story, right?
That's Ian Forrester, exactly, that's it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when Neo wakes up from the Matrix and finds mm-hmm. himself in a puddle of goo in a giant kind of battery farm, when the bubble goes, you know, you have nothing. So, yeah, you know, I said, you know, extemporizing, I mean, maybe the bubble is more, it can also be a virtual reality place as well. I mean, it is their only reality. I really liked I don't know where it was shot, but the architecture and the vaguely tasteful brick and grass and concrete was exactly fitting with all their pastel clothes.
It was filmed at the University of Swansea.
Oh yeah, that sounds about right.
Or Swansea Bay, or Swansea University Bay campus.
Right, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, I it's in Wales, and I'm mm-hmm. it's brand new, and it's very acceptable to young people. So yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
So, but yeah, it did fit very well with this kind of clean line, clean architecture, very commodified looking.
Wes Anderson, that's the director I was trying to think of. I really don't like Wes Anderson. Everything's everything is pastel colored and quirky in a way that Lindy Pepperbean and her mates had kind of quirky names. Ooh, it's Gothic Paul. was literally not gothic at all.
He had black hair and mascara.
Well, there you go. What can be more gothic than that? One thing, again, I mean, this is not an original observation of mine, but it's something that I think makes a little bit of sense. When we saw their corpses being dragged, a corpse being dragged off screen, it was clear that someone had blue blood, whether it was the man trap or one of the fine line people. And of course, if they're blue blooded, then they're posh. Right. They didn't sound particularly, they weren't kind of British posh, but they were certainly, these were upper classes that I think that we were dealing with.
Yep.
And this is a kind of a holiday camp, a kind of work experience camp for the wealthy. And they have blue blood and, you know, they have privilege and they really don't see the need to relate to anybody else other than themselves.
Right. It was weird because they weren't on the home world. They were in a bubble city surrounded with a social media bubble. They were doubly bubbled and the bubble pops. It just was not anything I would have expected in this series. And it's very on the nose, succinct social commentary that the story that RTD put together.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it really hit all the marks. You know, it was suspenseful.
Yeah,
it was, you know, well acted. There was a monster. There was a story, and there was a really great payoff, which dovetailed exactly into things that we've been curious about this particular doctor. It's like, well, how does he deal with societies who don't like the way he looks? And you know, this case, you know. He likes to think that isn't something that happens, but when it does, it is obviously something that's very distressing to him. One thing, again, it was interesting to me is obviously, you know, he's not the first non-white doctor that we've had. We've also got Joe Martin in there as well.
Right.
But then I guess we don't really know where the fugitive doctor fits in to the doctor's own timeline, if at all. And she always seemed to me to be kind of fully aggressive and would have just gunned down a bunch of racists rather than trying to save them. So maybe that's not, you know, that's not germane in this point. But anyway.
I wonder, is this the first time where the doctor... This is obviously the first time the doctor fails due to racism.
Right.
I was trying to think, is there any other instance where the doctor fails because the people would rather do their own thing, which ultimately would probably lead to their death? And I came up with a blank, like with the Sunmakers.
Yeah.
He leaves them to it.
For good or ill, yeah.
You know, they probably will die once the suns around Pluto burn out, but he doesn't stick around to see it. In this case, the doctor kind of knows that they're doomed as soon as they get outside the protective bubble, and he can save them, but he doesn't. So that's kind of weird. I mean, but it's really bleak. Like you said, it's a big downer.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Warriors of the Deep, where everyone ends up just being dead. Because that's what they're, you know, that's what kind of mutual assured destruction is, where they just mutually destruct each other. No, I mean, it is incredibly bleak that people would literally, well, A, that racism exists in the far future, B, that people would rather die or would rather put themselves in immense risk rather than escape scot-free, rather than spend time with someone who they don't believe to be a real person. And also, you know, the kind of arrogance of, I don't know, young white people, that they, yeah, we've lived in a bubble all our lives, but you know what, we're just going to go and live in a jungle now and everything will be fine because we know that we're so great and so talented and so full of energy and know-how that we'll just be able, it will just be like living in our bubble, only it'll be in a jungle instead. And we know that's nonsense. And, you know, they're not going to last 5 minutes out there if that jungle is the kind of place where these man traps have evolved and, you know, skulk around eating people. So. I was thinking about it, you know, well, maybe would this have worked on, you know, maybe it was weird that, you know, the parents of these privileged racist white kids, you know, put them in a bubble on a quite a dangerous jungle planet. Maybe they should have put them in a space station. But then, you know, even in Doctor Who, you know, space stations are just as vulnerable to attack by monsters as jungles. So yeah,
that, instead of man traps, it could have been Wirren.
I was just about to say we could have had Wirren.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you reminded me of that when you're trying to think, well, okay, what is another one where no one really survives? People do survive from Nerva.
Yeah.
But that is a very white bunch of people on that particular space station.
Well, the Doctor, in the Indomitable speech, he saw all races, all creeds in it. But the cast itself, of course, is very white. So
yeah,
it's
yeah,
implied yeah. that there's diversity, but
we don't see it.
1975, it wasn't cast that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you make of the Doctor recognizing Susan Twiss as the ambulance woman on the Cleric planet?
Yeah, well recognized, Doctor. You're obviously paying attention. I was a little bit confused by Ruby then saying, well, I've seen her somewhere else.
And right.
Basically, well, you mean the hitchhiker? Not the hitchhiker, you know, the fell walker on the clifftops? Because if that's some kind of alternative timeline, then she shouldn't really remember that at all.
Well, she did call out the song requests.
Oh, well, there is that. Yeah, yeah. You know, I've heard something interesting. This is not necessarily... this isn't relevant at all to this episode, but I'm going to kind of say it anyway. Again, on social media, someone pointed out that when Susan Twist, the character, Susan Twist character, is in the past, she's red. And when she's in the future, she's blue.
Huh.
And when she's in the present... i.e. talking directly to Ruby in the now, she's wearing both red and blue.
Okay.
Like a kind of red shift Doppler effect thing?
Maybe. I don't know.
So anyway, I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool. So I don't know. Yeah. What's going on there? Who knows? We'll find out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, next week is our penultimate story of the series. So we have Rogue, which is the Bridgerton episode, and then we have the two-part
right.
finale. So this... series is
just better pay off.
The series is really trundling along at a great clip due to the brevity of having only 8 episodes to work
right,
with.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was just an observation that I read. It sounded fun to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make with the red and the blue shifting of Susan Twist.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of Susan Twist at all, actually, because she's obviously not some kind of Scar-Off that, you know, has fragmented herself through time and is, like, equally evil at any particular point or knowledgeable about herself. And she exists outside of the Doctor and Ruby's perception,
mm-hmm.
i.e., you know, the Villain Guard Corporation set up a AI ambulance with her face before Ruby and the Doctor arrived on that planet, I'm assuming. So I don't know. I mean, this is building up, and I hope it's going to pay off in a way that is successful and as rewarding as the payoff in this episode was. I suspect possibly not, because I think this was a really good payoff, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. We have Mrs. Flood, the neighbor.
Right.
Who's kind of an open question, but she hasn't really played that much of a role, but which would have seemed like she would have, knowing what a TARDIS was. Number two, we have the Susan Twist character, which ties in with the whole Mavity thing going back to
Sir Isaac Newton.
Wild Blue Yonder.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's indications that we're not quite in this world. There wasn't a snow moment in this, I guess, because it wasn't featuring Ruby.
Right.
So that's another element that has been seeded through this series. But
yeah,
it reminds me of a P.D. James mystery where a lot mm-hmm. of things are introduced, but then we're going to meet someone potentially at the end who ties it all together. It's not like a Agatha Christie novel where all the pieces are known at the beginning and it's up to
right.
Poirot or Marple to
work it out.
To work yeah. it out. It's sort of like, I don't think we have all the clues yet to
no.
work it out.
I thought it was interesting, just to go back to last week, I thought it was interesting when Mrs. Flood, when we did see Mrs. Flood in 73 Yards, when she came out of the house, she did very pointedly say, this has got nothing to do with me.
Yes.
And then went back in again. So, you know, obviously, yeah, I mean, she's something.
Mm-hmm.
She's not just an Anita Dobson character. She's a thing. How she relates to Twist and how they all relate to the Doctor and to, you know, the mystery of Legend of Ruby Sunday remains to be seen, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I had another minor revelation. I think last week I was complaining that someone like Ruby Sunday would not have known the concept of a yard, and therefore why were they talking about yards all the time. I was interested to note that in this episode Ruby Sunday was talking about feet, which is again something her age, someone her age would know nothing at all about. And then I suddenly realized this program, I'm watching it on Disney Plus. So obviously, the Britishness of Doctor Who, which is something we all cherish, you know, particularly in America, is now being completely diluted by Disney, because we are using imperial measurements all the way through rather than metric, which is what would make sense.
Do you think that's just not Russell being, what, 57 years old? Or
I mean, I'm only slightly younger than Russell. I think 3 years younger than him. And I was taught metric at school. So I think this is a deliberate appeal. Not appeal, just pandering is the wrong word. I think this is just making sure that Americans watching this feel comfortable with measurements given. That's all. Because if, I mean, if she was going, it's I don't know what 73 yards would be in meters, it's 50 meters away. Mm-hmm. Like, you'd all be going like, what, 50 meters? Well, where's she from? Is she in the army? And, you know, anyway, and that's what I think's going on with that.
Well, I think we'd have to see what he would be saying in early episodes. And I'm not sure the imperial units for distance or even metric unit for distances came up much in the scripts at all.
Yeah. I'd have to review. You're right. I'd have to review what units of measurement we've been using throughout to make sure that my allegations were correct. But it does really stand out to me that she's not using metric measurements. It seems really wrong for her character.
Because of her character more than the writing.
Yeah, but because of her character. I mean, she's a 20-something woman. The year is 2024. Mm-hmm. She has never been taught. She has never lived in a country. She's never been taught. She has never had any experience of any measurement apart from miles, possibly pints, other than metric. Okay. So, yes, we were talking about distance. If we're talking about speed, she'll use MPH. And if she's talking about longer distance, she'll talk about miles rather than kilometers. But if she's talking about shorter distances, she will be using meters and centimeters.
So I'm going to say that this is an Davis thing, that it just isn't something that he's thinking of, because he uses yards in his scripts all over. So if Runaway Bride, he's using yards, from the Doctor, using a reference of measurement. In Gridlock, he has Brannigan using yards. Voyage of the Damned, again, it's the Doctor using yards. So
have you just Googled Doctor Who measurement?
Are you
just remembering this?
I'm searching through scripts here, as we say. So
I take it back. It just really stands out to me in this instance, because I mean, that this is such a kind of a new show. Mm-hmm. You know, it's season one, it's all brand new, this is all contemporary, this is real people doing real things in, you know, the real world, blah blah blah. To have it to be so, it really jumps out to me as being archaic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you very well may be right. This could be just Russell is a, you know, man in his early 60s who still likes to think about things being measured in yards, mm-hmm. however long a yard is. I don't even know how long a yard is, to be honest. How long is a yard?
3 feet.
It's exactly 3 feet?
Yeah. Yard is 3 feet, and that's roughly equivalent to a meter.
Oh, okay. I literally have, as I said, I have no real conception of how long a yard is.
Yeah.
I've got a pretty good conception of how long a foot is and how long a meter is, but yards have really always kind of escaped me, to be honest.
Yeah, a yard is about 9/10 of a meter.
Okay. Oh, interesting. All right. We'll have to file that away. 9/10 of a meter.
Roughly. But I think that...
Oh, there you go. Fact fans.
I think a script editor would catch this. I'm not sure how much of a script editor goes over.
Is script editing is going on around here? Yeah.
That's... I think there is definitely a script editor, but it's not like the Terrence Dix script editor. That's what we get with the showrunner. That's the head writer. RTD is looking over these things for tone, for story arc, that type of thing. Script editor is going to be more, I would say, grammar, but even then that's subject to the authorial way of going it. So I'm not really sure what a modern script editor does, but these are being script edited. I just don't know what authority the script editor has to make changes.
But don't want to end this. Don't want to finish our podcast on a downer about measurement. This was a great episode. this was a great episode that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I agree. I would... I was ranking it pretty tied with Boom as the best of the season, and you're going with it is the best of the season. So
I just rewatched Boom with our little next door neighbor Lo, 8-year-old Lo, and she really enjoyed it and thought it was really frightening. I was interested to see her reaction because obviously there's a lot about Boom is about a kid and the kid's relationship with its father, with her father. You know, which is, you know, right where Lo is in terms of her development as a child. And it was okay. I still think it's okay. I think there's a lot of too much hand-waving going on for me with Boom. And there's too much joy that the father isn't really dead when he actually is literally dead.
Yes.
That really wasn't working for me. But, I mean, it was a great improvement of the previous two episodes, and I think actually also better than last week's, which was a bit as I think we were, well, you said it was boring, I said it was nonsensical and rushed. And I think it was all of those things. 73 yards.
Yeah, the only thing I felt was contrived in the story was that we had to have 100 digits to get through the door lock, which really was there to slow things down to have the whole set piece of the red eye attacking.
Yeah, I thought of that as well, and then I thought, actually, this is funny though. You know, I'm sort of not rooting for these people that much, and I think it's kind of vaguely funny that, you know, they have to spend so much time plugging in a 100-digit combination that is released one set of digits at a time. I thought that was kind of I found it amusing, but yes, no, it was completely contrived, as was the alphabetical order thing, seemed to me to be contrived as well. But, you know, again, one can easily explain that away by thinking about AIs and, you know, how, you know, well ordered they might be.
Yeah, I think
except when it comes to combinations on doors.
I think an AI would have just killed everyone right away. The only reason why the AI would need to go alphabetically is you only have so many man traps to go around.
That's a good point.
And then you would go systematically.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But if you're just going to do the I, then you'd have 0 hour and
bam,
good night.
Everyone's dead. But again, you know, this could be a sadistic AI that wants to kill people horribly rather than, you know, mercifully.
It did take out the homeworld.
Yeah, in a pretty... Well, again, that was slightly contrived, I thought, because that means in some ways the slugs are not indigenous to this particular planet, but they are indigenous to the homeworld planet as well, unless the AI found some way to transport the slugs there.
Or they genetically created them.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, from food or something, I don't know.
Yeah. And then the slugs were able to destroy the homeworld, like, so quickly... more quicklier than it was able to destroy the relatively small amount of people, I'm assuming, who were on the Fine Time planet, or maybe there weren't many parents on the main planet. Who knows? Anyway,
who knows? Yeah,
yeah. But it's important that there wouldn't be some kind of rescue party that would come and rescue them.
Yeah, I think that was the reason for destroying the home world. Another coldness would be that the parents just wouldn't care, but. That might have been a bridge too far.
That would have been good. Like, we're glad they're dead. They're all racists. Actually, so are we. Oh my God. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah. That would have been good. No, as I said, it really worked for me. It worked really, really well.
Yeah.
And I did not see it coming. I was expecting a racism episode, but I was expecting it to be the kind of... it feels mean to call the Chibnall racism episode heavy-handed, but it kind of was.
It definitely was.
It was very well-meaning, and it was, you know, very, what's the word? It was very respectful, but that made it an incredibly dull episode. This was not dull at all, and I was not expecting this to end up being a racism episode. And to have that kind of rug pulled from me so expertly and well without me noticing, even though, you know, I am kind of paying attention... because I like the show, was very satisfying.
Yep. Well done. Well written episode. Good on RTD. One of his best. Probably the best of the series, definitely.
I'm going to say best of the series so far. Let's see what we... Well, we got some new writers next week with Rogue. And then we have a rusty two-parter final. So we'll see what happens.
We will see.
You know what I'm thinking is going to happen with Rogue? I'm thinking we're being sold a pup that who's the handsome man? Jonathan something, the actor. Anyway, that he's a baddie. I think he and the Doctor are going to fall in love and there's going to be a male-male relationship.
Hmm.
That's what I think is going to happen. And I think they're doing some misdirection by saying, oh, look, I think he's going to be the baddie. But actually, no, I think he's going to be the love interest. That's my prediction. I'm not saying I don't know anything. That's what I think is going on.
We'll see.
But we'll see. I don't know. I'm probably wrong. They're birds. There's evil space birds.
Yeah. Whatever they do, they're going to have to. This is our penultimate episode. I said this again. You know, we need to really set up the finale.
Pick up the pace. Yeah, we need to stop hinting at stuff like, ooh, who is Mrs. Flood?
Mm-hmm.
We need to be told who Mrs. Flood is.
We may not
quite
know.
Soon.
I'm thinking we may not know about Mrs. Flood until next series. I think
we're going to keep her under wraps.
I think she is the Scars of Doom for this series.
Okay. She's the crack that Moffat really couldn't find a way to successfully resolve and just ended up sort of basically ignoring it a little bit.
She truly is Prisoner Zero.
She is Prisoner Zero. yeah, okay. Well, we'll see. It's nice. I said, the thing about Boom, it's nice to have Moffat actually back in a bit and under the tutelage of RTD. I actually think they work well together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think RTD really kind of moderates the over cleverness of Moffat, and I read somewhere that this was originally going to be a Matt Smith Doctor and Rory and Amy episode. It was a Moffat story that was then redone by RTD. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I definitely read that online somewhere.
Dot and Bubble,
yeah. Dot and Bubble.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Anyway, so we'll see. Anyway, yeah.
All right, excellent.
Okay.
Well, thank you for listening to episode 248 of the Metabolist 2 podcast. I have been contemplating giant mantrap escargot with Ben.
And I have been obsessing about different units of measurement with David.
Until next time.
Farewell.
Slugs of love, light taste, and endless.